Does anyone know how to turn on the lights down here?
Hi, I'm Griffin. I live down the street. Joe's mom's neighbor Doug just handed me this microphone. I mean, is this a microphone? Why is it duct taped? Anyways, so this has been a gigantic misunderstanding. Joe called my dad and asked if I'd bring down a screwdriver, and when I got here, that really creepy Doug guy handed me this microphone and told me to talk to the listener, whoever that is, and then to tell you that I'm the new intern? What does that even mean? Well, if I'm gonna be an intern, that's just ridiculous. I really don't want to be Griffin the intern. Hey, what if I was just the Fintern? That'll be way better. Okay, let's start over. Check it out. 3, 2, 1. Hey everyone, I'm Griffin the intern, or as the ladies in my fourth period call me, the Fintern. Pleased to meet you. Today, Joe's mom's neighbor Doug handed me a cassette tape that started off with some band named Air Supply, but that went into episode 35 of the old Two Guys and Your Money show. Who would listen to that show? Probably should have been called the Two Old Guys and Your Money. Isn't that the show my dad said went on to become the Stacking Benjamins show? So anyways, I went ahead and listened to this episode, and this guy Pat Flynn from the site Smart Passive Income stops by to talk about how he learned to let go of the past and focus on his own growth. It's actually a pretty good story if you're into that kind of stuff, and you'll really like it. But I'm still trying to figure out who to give this screwdriver to so I can get the heck out of here. I'm just a kid, but I'm pretty sure that if these two guys talk about investments in this episode, I think this might have been a long time ago. And looking at this basement, these two old dudes aren't so successful that they can give advice. And if they do, it's probably not good advice. Can I get out? Can I leave now?
Previously, before a taping of Two Guys and Your Money. Let's do this.
I've been drinking almond milk. You ever had almond milk?
No.
Highly recommend. Vanilla almond milk.
Somebody else told me it tastes great. It's just...
it's like vanilla almond ice cream. It's delicious.
Yeah. Live from my parents' nearly finished basement, this is the Two Guys and Your Money Show. I'm financial writer Joe Saul, see high average Joe on our blog, and with my partner in crime, the other guy, we operate this exclusive website called The Free Financial Advisor. That's where you can find notes for our show. Send all emails with questions or comments to Joe at thefreefinancialadvisor.com. And here he is, back for another week on the microphone, Mr. O.G.
It seemed like your intro gets longer every time. Maybe you have to put in a breath, little like a, one of those parentheticals, like take a breath. But then you'll be like Ron Burgundy and say, it's like, live from my parents, nearly finished, take a breath, basement.
Did you like the exclusive website? We have a very exclusive website.
Yes, we do. Yeah, absolutely.
Our website's only open to people that have computers and know how to navigate the web. If you can do those two things, we'll let you in.
All right.
So we have a big show this week, dude. We have this guy who I think quite a few of our listeners might know, but for the people that don't know who this gentleman is, he was an architect and lost his job and decided, why don't I go just work on the internet? And he is now one of the biggest people in the realm of helping people on the internet start their websites. His name is Pat Flynn.
Preeminent.
He is
expert.
For people that work on the web, he is what we refer to as the man.
Guru would be another one.
Good. Yeah. How about that? Two gurus in a row. Gene Chatsky, guru. Huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice work.
Pat Flynn, guru.
Wow.
How about that? You and I? Let's get the show moving. All right, OG, there has been a kerfuffle. Don't you love that word, kerfuffle?
I've never heard of it.
There's been a kerfuffle.
Could I have kerfuffle in a sentence, please?
Yes, there has been a kerfuffle between some peeps on the Twitter stream and a guy that you may have heard of called Dave Ramsey. You ever hear this guy, Dave Ramsey?
Could I have country of origin?
Tennessee. Oh, that's not a country. Yet.
I'm still on kerfuffle. Isn't it? It's about nationals. It's getting close to spelling bee contest time, isn't it? Where they have nonstop wall-to-wall coverage on ESPN and make you go,
Oh, I'm taking that kid because he is short and looks really smart. I got $20 on him.
It's the draft. You're drafted kids. Like, and from New Jersey, Chris Christie's hometown, Meadowbrook Elementary.
The third pick in this year's draft goes to Jimmy Peterson. Yeah, so anyway, here's the deal. So Dave Ramsey mentioned that you can be a millionaire if you save $100 a month and you get a 12% rate of return. And immediately the internet decided not to hear $100 a month.
They heard the 12%.
Which, let's get this out of the way right now. What do you think about the 12%?
I actually caught a little wind of this. You and I were talking a little bit about it, and I saw something on Twitter. Dave had actually posted a couple of links to a couple of mutual funds that have historical returns of over 12%, which is always great to find in the rearview mirror. I mean, I could probably find one that historically last year went up 40%, but that has no bearing on what's going to happen this year. I think that it's comical to assume that you're going to get 12%. It would be wonderful if you did, but you might as well, I don't know, plan for 7, 8.
Well, the bad news about 12% is that he completely, all the kerfuffle is around the wrong half of that message. Because the real part of that message is if you save money, you can actually have some later.
Right, because at the end of the day, it's not about the return that you get. It's not about the fund manager tenure or the alpha ratio or any of those other intrinsic things, which matter a little bit. What matters, what is the determinant factor, is whether or not you're actually doing the saving. Save money.
Right. Later on, once you've saved money, which it's not going to be $100, OG, you know, at that point, once you have money saved, then the return that you get makes sense. I used to love, when I was a practicing advisor, I loved working with engineers because I like as much as they like knowing about, you know, going deep and about how the fund actually works and about expenses and about the manager and about putting together the correct asset allocation. But we had this phrase, and I'm sure you use this phrase too, seeing the forest from the trees. And there were a lot of engineers that I met with, very smart people, focused way on the wrong tree. They get all the way down to expense ratio, down to the right manager, down to the right fund. And I'd ask, how much money are you saving? And they'd say,
I haven't started yet.
Yeah,
as I pick the right fund, then I'll start saving.
They're paralyzed and they're doing absolutely nothing. Let's do something first with the wrong fund. And we'll fix that later, because if your $100 that you save turns into 97 because you picked the wrong fund instead of going up to 101, you know?
So what is the average return over the last 20 years of the average equity fund?
I would say 10.2.
No. The average return over the last 20 years in the average equity, average stock fund is closer to 8%.
Okay, sure.
What is the average return of the average investor over the last 20 years?
Oh, wow. Half that.
Not even. 3. So what makes up the difference between the average investment getting 8 and the average investor who gets 3?
Investor behavior.
That's it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's just doing it. And even if you're average... If all you are is average, all you are is the average, if you can only pick the average investment,
yeah,
you're going to do better than double what the average investor does, because the average investor does, you know, bad timing, has terrible diversification, under-diversifies, like all these other different things that they do incorrectly, as opposed to focusing singularly on the one issue, which is delay gratification, stuff as much money as possible into the XYZ fund, it doesn't matter, and be done with it.
And that's the only reason I wish Dave Ramsey hadn't said 12%, because the argument is on the half the sentence, the 12%, the part that really is, I don't even think it's his point, but...
And where this came from, and he's being congruent, which is helpful, because if you look at his book, The Smart Money Makeover, I think that's the name of his book, right?
The Total Money Makeover.
Totally. Smart Money Makeover is somebody else's book, probably. But if it's not, dibs.
That's ours.
We got that one now. Dibs. I call shotgun. No tag backs.
Yeah, but in the Total Money Makeover, he writes 12%.
And when he wrote that book, if memory serves, he wrote it in the early 2000s, late 90s, which, you know, 12, you could wrap your head around it, because we had just gone through 20 years of a bull market.
Big stuff, right?
But now, you know, if he were to say 8, he would, he's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't. If he says 8, then people say, well, in your book, you said 12, so what gives?
Yeah, right.
You know, it doesn't matter. Save your friggin' $100 a month into an equity mutual fund and be done with it.
Haters will hate.
Haters will hate. Don't hate the play, hate the game.
Well, we're about to have him, His Majesty, in the of the internet, the king of the internet, Mr.
Play Pomp and Circumstance.
We should. As he comes walking down the stairs and sees Velvet Elvis for the first time.
Yeah, right.
I wonder what Pat's going to think about the dogs playing pool.
Have you seen the that new Mayhem commercial where he's the house cleaner? He says, I'm the world's worst house cleaner. Yes. I'm having a pretty fabulous Tuesday in your house. And he's just like breaking stuff. And then he walks up the stairs and he says, unfortunately, I didn't see the tear in your carpet. Because you have bad homeowners insurance, this is going to cost you. And he like falls down the stairs. You should warn Pat about all the misplaced carpet on the stairs. And
hey, Pat, watch out for that. And if there's anything, yeah. Well, here he comes, Mr. Pat Flynn. We like to interview people who've had interesting journeys, from Natalie Sisson, who biked all the way across Africa, to Chris Klinke, who, if you remember, quit his high six-figure job to scale Mount Everest. Our next guest has a journey that's also interesting, but very, very different from those two. Pat Flynn was in architecture when he was let go, and this could have been the end of the story, but for Pat, this is just the beginning. So, Pat, welcome to the basement, dude.
Thanks for having me, Joe. I'm really, really happy to be here.
Well, pull up a beanbag chair and let's talk about this, because how did you feel that day that you found out that you were leaving the world of architecture?
Oh, gosh, it was a big blow. It really was. I mean, I've never felt that kind of instant depression, really. And yeah, there were some, you know, clues leading up to it, but I was just, there was always that glimpse of hope that they were going to keep me around, because they were just letting people go one after another, and then it was my turn to come into the office. And they actually said right before they told me I was getting let go, Pat, you're one of the youngest and brightest guys we have. Oh. And that was like, yes, they're going to keep me. And then they were like, but we have to let you go, unfortunately. And, you know, it was tough. I was engaged at the time. I didn't know what I was going to do, because I had planned my whole life to go down this route of, you know, being an architect. And I was doing everything right. Up till, you know, I was doing everything the way I was supposed to do it. I got good grades in high school, great grades in college. I was doing all the extracurriculars. I was, you know, networking with people, and eventually landed my dream job, which got sort of swept away from me at that point. So it was tough. It was really, really tough.
Did you look for another job in architecture at first?
Yeah, totally. That same day, actually. I called as many architecture firms that I knew, that I had friends in, and they were all letting people go at the same time. So there wasn't any way I was going to get another job in architecture at the time. I even called a bunch of consultants that we had worked with in engineering and plumbing to see if there was any sort of even just basic CAD work that I could do, even though I was promoted recently to a job captain at this point and I wouldn't have to touch CAD as much anymore. I was willing to do it just to hold on to that job for as long as possible.
Yeah, just to stay in the business, sure.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This is a financial show, so I have to ask, how was your financial picture at that point?
Well, I had just gotten promoted, actually, to job captain from a senior drafter position, and I was earning about $60,000 a year at that point, which to me was amazing. I mean, that was fantastic, and to have that sort of taken away, you know, I had my emergency fund set up. I had, you know, I was doing everything, again, the way I was supposed to and the way I was taught. I had my emergency fund, which was actually very helpful, and also a, you know, 401ks and everything. Everything was all set up. Everything was perfect, and then it just everything just got scrambled in my brain, and I didn't know what to do. I just was like, am I going to have to withdraw from my retirement accounts? Am I going to have to dip into my emergency fund? You know, is there a severance package? And luckily, you know, when I had learned I was going to get laid off, I had about 2 or 3 months to continue working to finish off some projects that I was kind of in charge of. But there was that sort of date that I knew I was going to be let go, and that was what was at first really tough, just understanding that there was an actual termination date, which was just a couple months away. So every day I came into the office, it was like, like maybe something will change today, or, you know, another day off the calendar until I get to that day where I'm let go. So it was really tough. And financially, you know, I was doing okay, but I didn't know what was going to happen after that point.
Well, it's like this escalator to hell.
Totally. That's really what it was. And it actually became a train to hell, because I actually, you know, to save money for the wedding and just to save money in general, my wife and I both, who were living in Irvine at the time, we decided to move back to San Diego to just save money. And, you know, when you live, you know, we were both living with our respective parents. So I got to move in back home with my parents. And, you know, a lot of people feel that that is sort of failure, but I didn't feel it as failure. I felt failure was the fact that I wasn't going to have a job. And, you know, we'd save money not having to pay rent. And, you know, of course, some perks that come along with staying at home with your parents, like food and laundry and stuff like that. But still, you know, I actually continued to work in Irvine, like I said. So I took a train from San Diego to Irvine every single day, 5 days a week. You know, it was cheaper than driving. And I needed that income. I needed to be there for the last couple of months. And every day I boarded the train at 4 a.m. in the morning or 4:30 in the morning. It was just, not another day on the train. And, you know, that's what happened at that point. It was a very tough, confusing time. My whole life was planned out since, you know, middle school.
Yeah.
And this was the first time where I didn't really have a plan, or I didn't know where I was going.
But it's funny, for a lot of people, this is the end of the story. You read about that over and over and over. And for you, it was kind of that, you know, the old phoenix from the flame, right? That this is really the beginning of where things started. You started, I mean, as far as I know, you may tell me differently, but that's when you decided to start a security website. And it seems like that germ of inspiration started everything. Where did that come from?
Well, it's interesting. The security site started later.
Okay.
It was actually a site that I had built while I was still working in architecture to help me pass an exam that I had just forgotten about because I had already passed that exam. It's called the LEED exam, LEED. And so I built this blog while I still had my job to help me pass this test and, you know, have a better resume, and actually helped me get promoted to job captain. And after I passed the test, you know, using this site as sort of a study resource, and, you know, it's much easier to study off of this website than carry around a bunch of notes in my sort of eyes. I just let it sit there and nothing happened. And all of a sudden I learned I was going to get laid off. And actually on the train ride one day, I switched from listening to music to listening to podcasts. And it was this one particular podcast called Internet Business Mastery that I was listening to. And there were a couple of success stories on there, people who were making a living at home doing their own thing. One story was about a guy named Sean Noonan, who he and his wife, they were making money by teaching people how to speak Indonesian. I was like, oh, that's really awesome. And then there was this one guy, Cornelius Hitchener, who was teaching people how to pass the project management exam. And that is when the light bulb went off, and I was like, hey, I have this LEED site that I had, and I put content into it for a whole year, and now it's just sitting there. Maybe I can repurpose that site and turn it into a business somehow or something. And what ended up happening was I learned some basics of internet marketing, the fact that you have to have traffic coming to your site in order to, you know, do something with that and potentially monetize it. So I put a tracking tool on the website, Google Analytics, and the next day I had learned that literally thousands, you know, 4,000 to 6,000 people a day were visiting my site.
And you had no idea.
I had no idea. And it really scared me at first. I was like, how is this happening? You know, I didn't know about Google keywords and all that stuff, but apparently I had written so much stuff on there and it was good and people started sharing it around that Google loved it and started to rank it really high for a bunch of relevant keywords. People started sharing it in blogs and forums and it just became this hit and I didn't even know it. But when I found out that it was a hit, I turned on the comments. People started asking me questions. I started to become this sort of expert in this industry, even though I really didn't feel like I was. It was just the fact that I was online and the one talking about this exam and helping people out. I eventually wrote a study guide for the my audience there, and it just exploded. The first month, I had made about $8,000 selling a $19.99 guide to help people pass this exam, and I added an audio guide later on, and I got up to the point where I was earning $20,000 to $30,000 a month just selling this study guide to people on this website. And that's when I was like, you know what? I'm making way more money than I would have ever made in architecture doing this. I get to be at home and I get to spend time, you know, not in the transaction experience. You know, I set it up in a way, and this was very inspired by Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Workweek, his best-selling book.
Sure.
I set it up as a system, as a way people can download or people can come to my site, purchase the ebook study guide, and get it delivered to them automatically using different tools and services that are out there. And there's tons of them now. We live in an age now where this was never possible before, but now it's so easy to set up these sort of systems where people can come to your site, buy something, and get it delivered to them, and you don't have to be there in order for that transaction to happen. And you know, everything changed after that one. I remember my very first sale. It happened right as I was leaving, maybe 2 or 3 days left in architecture, and it was just a perfect transition. I mean, I couldn't have been any luckier.
Wow.
Really. But I'm never, you know, the getting let go was the best thing that ever happened to me.
How much longer then was it before you decided to not look back, to stop applying for architecture jobs?
Yeah, it was, well, first part, I after I tried and I just had no success, that was kind of a big deflation in my head about the industry in general and where things were headed. But it was when I started earning an income on my lead site that I was like, wow, this is really possible. Because that, you know, my whole thinking of online business beforehand was very, you know, it was sort of a snake oil type of industry, very scammy. And, you know, here I was really providing value for people on my website, and people were happy to pay me for it and send me handwritten thank you notes for everything I've given them. I mean, that is what surprised me the most is how much of an effect my site had on people's lives and the fact that I was actually getting paid for it too. And I felt so much more fulfilled doing this and actually touching individual lives as opposed to being the guy drawing the blueprints and nobody knows who that is, you know.
Right.
A building can go up and there's thousands of people involved in that and nobody knows anybody. But here I was helping people pass a little exam in this little industry and you know, getting handwritten thank you notes for it. It was awesome.
Well, the people that don't know you listening to this, Pat, may not know that you are known by many in the internet community as the founder of a website called Smart Passive Income. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got to know you at first was because of that website. When did that pop up?
Yeah, that popped up after the first month I wrote my ebook and started to see sales from it. You know, like I said earlier, I had made about $8,000 from that very first month of sales. And that, again, just opened my eyes to all the possibilities that were out there. I could have done this way earlier. I just didn't even know about it. It took my layoff to help me understand and sort of break free from being conditioned to the fact that I was supposed to be an architect or go down this route that everybody had taught me to be down, to go down. So I created the Smart Passive Income blog after that first month, in late October 2008, to just share everything that happened and to just hope that I can reach people and tell them how amazing the opportunities are out there to use the internet to, you know, build a business or provide value and get paid for it. And so you'll notice on smartpassiveincome.com, I just share as much as I can. I mean, when I first started smartpassiveincome.com, I wasn't making any money from it. I just wanted to share everything because, again, I felt like I owed somebody something for all the amazing things that happened.
Yeah.
And then eventually smartpassiveincome.com started to explode. And I think what happened was because I was being so transparent and honest about everything, actually sharing all the tactics and strategies I was using and even revealing how much money I was making, you know, and did that again to be transparent and show people what the possibilities were, that differentiated myself and smartpassiveincome.com from all the other sort of make money online sites out there, which again are sort of, you know, a little bit more aggressive or just feel like they're trying to squeeze every dollar out of you. You know, I don't sell anything on the site. I just share. And as a result, people go out of their way to pay me back, typically by clicking on affiliate links for products that I use and recommend to help them get started too.
Yeah, there's no pitch on your site that says, are you sitting down?
Yeah,
guess what? Sunday,
you can make
Sunday,
money
Sunday.
In your sleep.
That's right.
Right now.
Now, along that, you know how tough it is out there in the trenches, whether you're doing what you're doing or what you were doing in architecture or anything. What role, you know, with all the coping going on during this big transition period, what role did mentors play?
Oh, a huge role. I mean, without my mentors, I wouldn't be here. And the funny thing is, I didn't really have an official mentor. I can't pinpoint one single person, or I can't remember a time where I asked one person specifically, hey, can I, you know, be your apprentice, or would you be my mentor? That didn't happen. But there were a lot of people around me or that I looked up to that I felt were mentors and absolutely crucial to helping me get to this point. And you know, I don't know if you consider this a mentor, but it was an absolutely crucial person in my life who helped me get here. And that was my wife, or my fiance at the time, who, you know, she could have really easily just said, you know what, screw this internet stuff that you're playing around with. We need to get money. Would you get a real job, please? Like, if she said that to me, I would have totally dropped everything, you know, and she was very supportive. She believed in me. She kept pushing me forward and saying that, you know, we're going to be okay. Just do what you need to do. And you know, that was absolutely crucial. And I know a lot of people deal with, you know, when they're trying to start something new or something different, you know, you get family members, you get friends and significant others who just don't believe in you. And that can absolutely crush any sort of momentum. And so I was very fortunate to have an amazing woman like that in my life. My parents were very supportive, although my dad is interesting. He wanted me to go back to college at first.
Oh,
Yeah, he was like, you know what, this is a perfect opportunity for you to go back to school, get your master's degree in architecture, and when you come back out of school, maybe the market will be better and you can have a better position. And I was like, oh, you're so right. Because my dad was always right, and I hated that about him. But a part of me was like, you know what, I've been doing everything that I was supposed to do, and yes, I know I'm supposed to go back to work now, back to school now. Maybe that's what this is assigned for, but it just doesn't feel right. And I, you know, what hurt me the most about what happened as far as getting let go was the fact that, you know, I had done everything right. I was doing everything I was supposed to do, yet I was still kicked out of my job. I didn't have that sort of control.
Yeah, you were not the master of your domain.
Exactly. If I succeed or if I fail, I want it to be my own fault and for stuff that I did or did not do. And, you know, so that's kind of the thinking process that I have now with whatever I do and why I continue to go down this route. And, you know, of course, it's been very successful, obviously. But, you know, there's so many opportunities out there. You just kind of have to see what's available. And the thing about online business is the risks are relatively speaking, they're much lower than, you know, starting up doing a startup or getting an angel investing or
sure,
you know, things like that. So there's definitely a lot of opportunity there. But, you know, besides family members, there were people who had successful online businesses already that I was looking up to, people like Yaro Stark from Entrepreneur's Journey. And then, of course, Jeremy and Jason from Internet Business Mastery. And plus those interviews that I heard on their site, you know, Cornelius and Sean, those are all indirect mentors that I had to look up to just show me that, you know, this stuff was really possible. And they weren't just giving me, you know, the exact strategies and tactics. They were giving me hope and they were giving me the realization that, you know, there is something better out there.
The story that we're touching on, and we're talking with Pat Flynn, who recently wrote, you know, the word book is tossed around a lot, but it's really more than that. We'll get into this in just, well, let's get into it right now. Let Go tells this very rich story that we're just kind of dotting I's and crossing T's, but not really touching on the whole story. It isn't just a book. Can you explain to people what this project Let Go is?
Sure. I mean, project is probably the best way to put it because it's definitely been a project. It's funny because I wrote the book in about 2 weeks, and you know, it was really that part was actually the easy part. because it was my story, but the platform that this book or project is published on is called Snippet App, and it's a brand new, you know, totally brand new platform slash marketplace where authors can write books now. And the thing about it is it doesn't just include text. You know, these books, or they call them snippets, they include video, they include audio, really beautiful looking imagery, you know, so it's multimedia. But in addition to that, it also, the books, like right in the book, it includes social media. So you can share every one of those multimedia functions that I just talked about, or, you know, that there's like, for instance, you could read a book and in the middle of it, there'll be a Twitter hashtag and you can actually see a conversation going about that Twitter hashtag right in the book. And it's really cool because I have one at the end of mine and the hashtag is Let Go Book. And I see people just sharing what they thought about the book or how, you know, just all these amazing things like right in the book. And so I think that's really cool. And you can actually join the conversation in the book again. It's currently on iOS, so iPad and iPhone, but it's as well. And I am repurposing it for Kindle too, which is going to take away that social media aspect, but there'll still be links for the videos in there. And the videos are really interesting, you know, because I've told my story before on my blog. People know my story, but I've never had the ability to share my story like this because of the multimedia platform and aspect of Snippet App. And so there's interviews in the book, you know, videos, you just push a button, the video plays. There's an interview with my wife, April, and we talk about sort of what was going through her mind when I had gotten laid off and how she kind of helped me pull through. There was an interview with my dad, actually, and we actually get into his thinking process when I got laid off and also where I am now versus his advice to let me go back to school, which is really interesting. We shoot on location at the spot at where I landed my architecture job, which was a really sort of, you know, that started the whole butterfly effect and really cool things like that. And it's called Let Go because, yes, I was let go from my architecture position, but you know, I talk about my journey and how I've become successful now. And in order for that to happen, I actually had to let go of the idea of going down the path that I was supposed to be on, or this quote, American dream, or, you know, and I also had to let go of my fears and everything that was, and I talk about that in detail in the book, you know, everything that was going through my head and the resistance that was just trying to hold me back the entire time and how I kind of plowed through those.
So how do people buy Let Go?
Well, right now, you can go on your iPad or iPhone and you have to download the free Snippet App sort of marketplace. So if you just type in Snippet App or just Snippet in iTunes, you know, on your phone or iPad, you'll see it. Or the direct link is appstore.com/Snippet App. It's a little bit, you know, I wish it was easier. There will be a direct link to Let Go in the future. But again, this platform is so brand new that they're just kind of rolling it out. But so appstore.com/snippet app, you download that app, it's free, and you'll see a promo for Let Go and myself there on the homepage, and you can just download it from there onto your device. Android is coming soon, and Kindle as well. You know, just the fact that it's on iOS only, I know, cuts out a huge potential audience who can see this, which I feel terrible about, but we're going to be able to, you know, my team and I are working to get it on Kindle very soon so that everybody can enjoy it.
Awesome. We'll also, Pat, have a link on our site on the show notes at thefreefinancialadvisor.com/35. And also, I'm sure if they come to Smart Passive Income, they'll find links there, too, to buy it, I would imagine.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, you talk about that a little bit in a promotional video that I watched about elephants and about how elephants are trained. Do you mind sharing that story with us?
No, not at all. So the cover includes, you'll see it's a big blue cover, the words Let Go, but there's an image of an elephant and it's sort of broken free from this chain and stake that was holding it down. And the story behind that is the way they train elephants, you know, it's interesting because when they're born, they tie them to a stake and a chain, and they're small elephants, and the stake and chain can kind of hold them back. So, you know, they're strong enough to kind of, to kind of chain down these infant elephants. And you know, over time, you know, these baby elephants will try to get away. They'll pull and just, they're not strong enough. They'll eventually give up and they'll just, you know, understand that they can't break free. But then when they grow bigger, you know, elephants obviously are huge and powerful. When they grow bigger, they're just so conditioned to the idea that, you know, trying to pull free and break free is painful, that even though they're totally strong enough to, you know, pull that stake out of the ground, they don't even try. And so that's kind of the analogy I use. Like, for a while, and all that resistance, you know, I didn't know that I had it in me, that I was a big, powerful elephant that could have broken free, and just being conditioned to feel that that wasn't the right thing to do, or that it was painful or scary. That's what was holding everything back. And it was only when, you know, all these events happened in my life that, you know, the chain finally broke and I could realize my full potential. So that's sort of the idea behind the elephant sort of analogy.
I still think it's really interesting, OG, that he decided to go with a book that is multimedia instead of going the traditional route. Because a guy that has that many followers on the internet could have easily gone with a publisher like Wiley or some other big business publisher. But the fact that he went multimedia and tried something new is totally par for the course with Pat Flynn.
He's been a pioneer, for sure.
Yeah, good
stuff. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we do, we got from him. So
that's right.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn.
Well, if we'd use any of the stuff that he tells us to do,
yeah,
we'd get
right.
way further
we'd
ahead.
We'd be way awesomer.
Hey, you know what, dude? I got a great idea.
I have an idea of what your idea is.
Oh, yeah? You think you do? You think so?
I know so.
Let's give something away. Was that what you were thinking?
Actually, no, but that's better.
Well, we are actually going to give something away, OG, because it is the beginning of April, and so we've wrapped up the March contest, giving away five, not two, not three, not four, but five Laura Vanderkam ebooks, either What Successful People Do Before Breakfast, What Successful People Do at Work, or What Successful People Do on the Weekends. And our winners are going to get to choose, and we actually ended up with a good number of contestants this time. I was, you know, about halfway through the month, it looked horrible.
Are you sure we got enough money in the budget to be able to give something away this month, too, after I kind of blew the wad on five books this last month?
On five whole books? Well, the good news is I just got the package from Gene Chatsky.
Nice.
And so we're giving away a book that is signed, by the way. The book is signed by Gene Chatsky.
Cool.
And I swear it is not it's not me pretending I'm Gene Chatsky. It is Gene Chatsky being Gene Chatsky.
Really,
so cool. We have that for a lucky winner next month. So no, that'll let the budget heal up so we can earn another $4 before we give away another, you know, $3 ebook and keep the dollar keep the fourth dollar to split between ourselves, you know.
Well, us and all the staff.
That's right. Those damn high paid interns.
We gotta have some retained earnings.
Well, let's get into this. People are like, come on, just give the damn things away. So here are our five winners. No coin flip. We just have five winners. Winner number one, Lindsay Q. Lindsay Q, I'll be emailing you about what your
Lindsay Q, I'll be emailing you.
That is far better than I could have done. but I did think something similar, like Suzy Q, when I wrote that. I'm like, well,
yeah,
okay.
That's what I thought.
Mr. Gabe Middleton. Gabe is a big winner, as is Andre from Boomerang Buck. Thank you, Andre, for listening to the show. And Andre won. Now, Andre tried to guess the voice. And Lindsay, Gabe, and Tyler, and I haven't even said Tyler yet, have I? Tyler Fuller is a winner. Tyler guessed the voice too, but I'll tell you, Andre guessed wrong when he heard this voice.
Great. I'm glad you enjoyed.
Great.
This is warm bodies.
Well, OG, that is the guy that filled in for you the week you were gone. That is my mom's neighbor, Doug. And somebody wrote, I think it was Tyler wrote, his name was Gabe, last nameless. So Tyler, Gabe, Lindsay, Andre, and our fifth winner, believe it or not, OG, Lance from Money, Life, and More.
Wow.
I know, when I saw his name come up, and his name actually came up first this time, I thought, it's about time. It is about time that Lance actually won. In a way, I'm kind of sorry that he won, you know, because it gets rid of this whole ongoing thing. But Lance, you also are taking home Laura Vanderkam book. We're going to give away another one for this month. There are only three ways to enter this contest. Three. First one is you can tweet about the contest. Second way is that you can like us on Facebook. And if you're already a Facebook fan, if you're in the inner circle, you get a free entry. And then the third way is to tell us who this voice is.
But I came into this business through journalism. I was an English major in college and not very good with my own money. In fact, I've had my own struggles with credit card debt and with botching the rollover of a 401k and with not being very careful about where my money was going when I was younger.
And that's a voice from this last month. And as always, OG has not heard the voice, has no idea who that might be, but he's going to guess anyway.
Who is Lindsey Vonn?
Very close. And actually, Tiger Woods might be very happy about dating this woman, too. So, but it is not Lindsey Vonn.
I got the gender right on the first time.
Isn't that great?
Score one for OG. What's up, everybody?
You are...
En fuego is what they would say by you.
En fuego. So join our drawing by going to thefreefinancialadvisor.com, episode 34, or thefreefinancialadvisor.com/April to win Gene Chatsky's book, Money 911.
Can we do a show entirely in Spanish?
En fuego. Hey, dude, can you get PK out from behind the canned goods? Because it's time for him to do his segment.
He's sitting in the corner eating his Easter candy still.
Eating the ears off all the bunnies?
Yeah.
Hey, Hey, PK, let's go.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to a very special quick hitter edition of Fractional Sense. I'm your host, PK, from a little site known as Don't Quit Your Day Job at dqydj.net. Today, Joe asked me to tell you folks, in a little less time than I usually have, what I felt about the whole Dave Ramsey 12% returns issue. In summary, Dave Ramsey told the internet through Twitter that no one should fail to retire a millionaire, as they could get 12% annual returns over 40 years. Much gnashing of teeth ensued, and he eventually replied with a link to a mutual fund that had done just that. Well, let's just say I have sympathy for both sides. On the negative side, Dave should know better. I happen to release tons of wonky data on the monthly returns of the S&P 500, which happens to be the best known diversified index of stocks, and one that 99% of you should have access to through, you know, mutual funds, ETFs, and other instruments in your 401ks, IRAs, 529s, and the like. The S&P 500, in 1,224 40-year periods that I ran the numbers for, never returned more than 12% after inflation. Ignoring inflation, it did so just 5.56% of the time. My results, 9.27% trailing year returns over 40 years on average, with a 1.95% standard deviation. That means that, yes, Dave's numbers are overly optimistic. However, the angry masses aren't out of the woods. You see, Dave's main points, if you'll allow me to interpret, is that saving is a marathon that none of us have an excuse to not join. The variable you have the most control over is not your return, but time in the market. Small sacrifices now and for every month for a long period of time, whether that's 40 years, like Dave said, or other, it will get you a nice hoard of money. You know, it might not be $1.2 million for only $100 a month, but it certainly will be a lot more than if you try to bank your snarky comments on Twitter. Back to the rest of the show.
Hey, we did it again, OG.
Finally.
Another show, another great guest, Pat Flynn.
How about that?
Who would have known? Pat Flynn on this show. And it, very interesting, his story of let go. Remember, you can go to our show notes at thefreefinancialadvisor.com/episode 35 to find...
Come again?
Yeah, to find the way to his book, or you can go directly to smartpassiveincome.com, which might be the quicker way, might be quicker than following my gibberish there. So this weekend, we are taping this on Thursday. It's going to go up Monday. You are headed to the finalistic four.
The penultimate games before the championship.
That's right. And maybe, so here's the thing. Do you also get a ticket to the championship game if your team wins?
You do not get one. I have purchased one.
Yeah, but then do you get a refund if it doesn't go through, or do you have to then sell that in the parking lot?
What do you think?
You have to sell that in the parking lot. So you're staying until Monday either way.
Well, no, not necessarily. the game's on Saturday. The first, the semifinal games are on Saturday. And if the if what we think happens, happens, then we'll stay there through Tuesday. If the unthinkable happens, then I'll probably throw them on Craigslist or StubHub that night and see if I can't get rid of them.
You could even stand in the parking lot right after the game.
Yeah, but that's a little risky with that, because I think I'll get better pricing by people that are going to come in to the game or whatever from waiting to see who wins the semifinal games.
Yeah.
The other thing is that there's not actual tickets. It's like an e-ticket thing that the NCAA does now to kind of cut down on that. So
how does that work? The e-ticket thing.
I can't remember the name of the company. I could look it up, but basically your tickets are registered to a certain form of ID, driver's license, credit card, whatever, something that's scannable. So when you show up at the gate, you scan a linked card and that prints off your ticket at the gate. So you don't go to will call to pick up your tickets. You just stand in line like everybody else. You go, you know, you get to the ticket guy that's going to scan your tickets if you have a hard ticket. And he takes your, in my case, a credit card that's linked to it, and he swipes the credit card through the machine. It verifies that that I've got, you know, umpty fast number of tickets. He prints them off, and through I go.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I have to do if I do sell them is I have to sell them to someone and then transfer those tickets on this e-ticket thing, and then they have to create an account at this thing and link a credit. It's a pain in the butt.
Wow. Well, let's talk, because it's that time of the show. Let's talk about movies. And you saw this movie, which is called what?
Olympus Has Fallen.
Let's listen.
Evening, ma'am.
Merry Christmas, Mike.
Mustang, this is Big Top, bringing out the full package.
Where'd that come from?
Everybody knows you did the right thing on that bridge. Even the president knows. You gotta learn how to get back into the real world.
Mr. President, we're ready for you.
Our guests have arrived.
I'd like to welcome you to the White House, sir.
Sir, there's no intrusion.
Let's go, move!
Wow. Well, what'd you think, man?
Give me the Pentagon on the line now.
Mixed reviews. Mixed reviews. In fact, I find that it's very interesting that Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 50, and then the people who saw it gave it a 75.
Oh.
Which pretty much sums up what I thought, which was if it went direct to DVD, I'd have liked it just as much sitting in my house. The fact that I watched it at noon and it was $5, also a reasonable price. But very gratuitous in terms of its violence. So take that for what it's worth. I mean, for crying out loud, you know, it's about terrorists taking over the White House. It's also very over the top. It's very over the top.
That's sad because the previews looked really good on this movie.
I'd give it I'd give it a 7. So it's not bad. It's certainly willing suspension of disbelief, suspenseful in some respects, but I never got the sense that there was any chance that the outcome would be anything that you would otherwise assume the outcome would be. You know, there's the whole time you're going through going, well, eventually this good thing will happen and, you know, the good guys will conquer evil and so on and so forth. But
fairly predictable.
Very predictable. Yeah. Everybody got shot in the head. Like there was not, it didn't seem like there was anybody who got shot in the stomach or the arm or the leg, you know, so little weird, but Gerard Butler's cool. I liked him. I liked him in Spartacus, or I'm sorry, 300.
Yes, I did too.
He was really good in that. And then, Law Abiding Citizen.
I didn't see Law Abiding Citizen.
You don't know what you're missing. You have to watch that this week. Please watch that this week so we can talk about it next week.
Is it on streaming?
I have no idea. Do you have the internet next to you? Do I look like Google? Just check, dude.
Well, there is an OG in Google. So just I thought you were part Google. My thing, I saw a couple of films this week, OG, but both of them I'd already seen. Cheryl's uncle was in town visiting, so we showed him. I actually showed my whole family the movie we talked about a few weeks ago, Sleepwalk With Me, that I really liked. When I like a film...
Sounds gross.
When I like a film good enough to watch it again and recommend that a bunch of other people see it, you know, that thumbs up. It's fantastic. And they loved it too. Also then he and I on our drive from Michigan to, my house in Texas, we got into this discussion and he said, wouldn't it have been great to have been in Paris during the time when all the writers and all the artists are there? And so I said, well, it's kind of like Midnight in Paris. And he goes, Midnight in Paris. That was a movie that was out recently, wasn't it? I said, yeah, it was a Woody Allen movie. He said, I've never seen a Woody Allen movie. Oh, man. So I immediately ordered it on Netflix, and it came a couple days later. And so I ended up watching that, too, which Midnight in Paris is one of my favorite movies of all time. So the one thing that we have watched is a show called The X-Files.
Please don't tell this again. This is our third take on your recapping of this episode. Just can you just email everybody the rest of the story?
It is a bad story, but suffice it to say, OG, that The X-Files is a show worth going back and watching. I didn't remember any of the episodes. They're very fun. They're incredibly campy. Cheryl's uncle, who doesn't like any of the supernatural stuff at all, he's laughing through them because they're so unbelievably good stuff.
Over the top.
Yeah, the good stuff. So we did it. Thank you to Pat Flynn for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good luck to Mr. Flynn on his book, whatever you say, that's not good.
I'm out of stuff to talk about.
And the theme music's coming up now, because it should.
Ba-da-da-da-da.
Bye.
Do.
This is funny. So we got an email from Lance at Money, Life, and More. Lance, quote, this is about last week's show, about the longest show ever. that happened to be on April 1st with President Obama on it, doing a group hug with John Boehner, which made me cry, by the way. I'm very sad that the tape gave out and we couldn't actually air that. And also those Goldman Sachs guys talking about why fees are so high and trying to lower the fees on Wall Street so that the little guy wins more often. You know, just give him back a little, right? I felt bad. But anyway, Lance writes, this is at 7:29 a.m. Monday morning. So he just listened to the show. I didn't get the podcast today. I take it something prevented you from recording? It was definitely a record for the longest podcast ever because it was like 2.5 minutes long.
Right.
And then I get an email from him at 7:37. So the first one was at 7:29. 8 minutes later, Lance sends me another one. The subject line says, "Wow, I'm slow." And it says, "April Fools, right?" And I just wrote back to Lance, "April Fools, what's that?
What day is that?"
But, dude, we did get, also from Lance, we did get a joke. We finally got a joke.
Somebody finally. There's only, six people that listen to this, so.
And one of them, if it weren't for Lance, we'd have no material. So, so thank you, Lance, because every week we wonder what we're going to talk about, and then you send us stuff, and Lance, our producer of the show. So
exactly.
That's right. All right. So the game here is crack OG up. If OG laughs at this joke, Lance is going home with something. We said it's going to be good. We haven't determined what it is, but it will be good.
This will be something awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We're committed to that. This is going to be a great prize. All right. You ready, dude?
So no pressure on me. So should I laugh or not? Just natural reaction.
Natural happens, natural happen. Reaction. Right. If you
we're
laugh,
we're building up too much. I think
we totally are building up too much. In fact, Lance is sad that I got to be the guy reading it because he's going to totally blame my crappy readership if he doesn't win. All right, here we go.
No, it's got to be your bowl.
It's got to be what?
It's got to be your bowl.
Yeah.
Right, Tommy boy.
All right, here we go. A young couple on their way to church to get married die in a car crash. At the pearly gates, they're greeted by Archangel Michael, and they immediately ask, "Tell us, Michael, is it possible to get married in heaven?" Archangel responds, puzzled, "Hang on a minute. Nobody asked that before. Let me go and find out." After he leaves, the young couple starts to ponder what will happen if they don't get along and eventually want to get divorced. They patiently wait for Archangel's return, and finally, after 3 months, he arrives with a smile on his face. "Great news for you two. I find out that, yes, you can get married in heaven." So the young couple says, "Listen, Michael, we were wondering, what if we stop loving each other and want to get a divorce in the future? Is that possible? Can you find out?" Archangel turns around reluctantly and heads back toward the gates, grumbling to himself. Three months it took me to find a priest in heaven. Now they want me to go and find a lawyer? You're right there.
Yep, that's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Oh, I saw you laugh.
I was chuckling. Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't temper it at all.
That's bad, dude.
I don't know, what are we looking for? Are we looking for like that?
We got.
Or are we just looking for smiles?
We got one joke, and you capitulated. I think you capitulated.
I didn't. So that was the natural reaction. I didn't even see it coming. I was trying to figure out what the punchline was ahead of time. I'm like, where's the punchline?
I didn't even read it ahead of time. I mean, I read the start of it. I'm like, cool, we got a joke. We'll just read it live. And so I probably should have read it ahead of time, huh? Just in case it was. But anyway, so.
Probably would have made me laugh.
Lance, you are going to win a monster prize. OG and I'll figure out what that is. And what's that?
I was smiling and chuckling. All right, cool. It counts.
Yeah, I think that counts. Don't you think that counts? Come on.
I'm not the rules official here, so.
Lance wins 2 prizes in 1 episode, dude. That's what Lance wins, a second copy of a Laura Vanderkam book. Of an e-book.
I got all sorts of books in my library. I'm staring at them right now. We could send him Body for Life, International Economics, Webster's Ninth New Collegiate Dictionary.
I could send him this lovely fake candle. Look at this.
Ooh, fake candle.
Yeah, lights up just like that. Isn't that great?
How about case study research methods?
We could send him a copy of Len Penzo's band, The Relics.
Mm. I've got a Spanish to English dictionary. I suspect it goes vice versa.
I have the end of my power washer that doesn't work anymore.
Oh, here's a good one. You and your baby, pregnancy.
That's, you know, Lance is getting married.
Oh, then we got all sorts of books up here. How about Jenny McCarthy's Belly Laughs? Oh, here's a chick book. This is going to work out good. Jennifer Wiener. Maybe it's Weiner. I don't know.
Wiener,
I'm going to call her Jennifer Wiener. The title of the book is called...
Of course you are.
Good in Bed.
Apparently
that's the chick book.
You have a book called Good in Bed?
I'm not kidding. It's by Jennifer. I don't have it. It's just in my house.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how it got there. I don't know what... It's all a big misunderstanding.
Yeah, a friend of mine dropped it off.
That damn cleaning lady. All right, man. So congratulations to Lance. We will next week tell Lance what the big prize is. And Lance had a good episode.
Yeah, he did.
All right, everybody. See you next week.